Welcome, y'all, to another episode of the Strength Academy podcast. Mundo here, joined by Grayson.
How's it going, guys?
And Grayson just mentioned that we are in the pre-teens of podcasting. It was episode number 11. So, yeah, we're going to kind of go over a question that was asked to us by one of the athletes in the gym. And that question was, what do you think about when you're lifting?
Yeah, so I like this question a lot because there's a lot of ways that you can approach it. And there's definitely like a lot of things that go into trying to get the most out of your workout. But then there's the other side where you end up thinking way too much. So there's that fine line. But I think one of the main things for me that I try to focus on while I'm doing a lift is more than focusing on like exactly how far back my knees will move or exactly how far over the bar I am, I try to keep my focus centered around balance. So when I'm doing the pull and the snatch, I'm really trying to make sure that my balance isn't shifting, and that's where I'm trying to put my focus. I'm trying to put my focus into my feet so I can really feel what's going on in the movement rather than trying to say, okay, my knees come back off the floor, then I get to the mid-thigh, and then I transition under and extend up. I just try to keep the focus mostly on the balance, because for me, that tends to correct a lot of the technical issues that I have. One of the things that I struggle with the most and struggled with all week this week is getting behind the bar too soon when I lift. And this is something that we kind of work on when we train together, is, you know, I have a tendency to try to pull my shoulders back right when I pass the knees. And keeping the focus on the balance and making sure that I'm staying over the bar is one of the really big things for me that I think about when I'm training. Same with back squatting and front squatting. I really try to keep my weight centered in the foot and try to feel that I'm not shifting forward or back, especially on the descent. So I guess, I mean, primarily I'm focused around using the balance focus to help me achieve the things that I want with the technique. So every rep from the bar all the way up, I'm trying to do the highest quality lift that I can.
Okay. For myself, I don't think about anything when I'm lifting. Like when I'm actually, my hands are on the barbell, I'm not thinking about anything. All my thinking is done before I touch the barbell. So if there's something that I'm working on, I usually sit there and think about that. So for me, I usually, on the snatch, I focus on bringing my knees up because I have a tendency to sweep my feet back and it kind of makes me hop back a little bit and I'll lose some lifts when they get to the higher percentages. And pretty much, it's kind of the same thing, like balance, like where my balance is. But once I step up to the barbell, I'm not thinking about any of it. I might give myself a cue, knees up, and that's it. Then I execute the lift. But beyond that, there's nothing going on. Like, it's all automatic. And I don't sit there with my hands on the barbell for 10 seconds and tell myself, knees up, finish my pull, extend, reach, up. You know, that's all done and over with. Like, yeah. Once my hands are on the barbell, it's just go, action, that's it. So when I'm sitting there, I am thinking about, like, if there's something I need to correct, I'll think about it and internalize it. If Grayson gives me a cue or something to work on, I'm internalizing it as I'm sitting there. And then when I step up to the barbell, there's nothing.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, where the line between staying focused on what you're doing and overthinking what you're doing. And that's why, like, when I say balance is like my focus, is when I'm snatching, or cleaning or whatever, I'm trying to almost observe what that feels like. So I'm focusing on how the lift feels, not exactly on what I'm like the minutia of what I'm doing. So I'm not thinking, okay, extend to the top, do this. I'm just trying to make it feel more consistent and see if I can feel what I'm doing. Because especially the snatch, it happens so fast that I find that staying focused on what it feels like kind of gives me better feedback. it's kind of just noticing that. Like when you, like, an example is kind of like when you sit down to meditate and you're just trying to hear what's going around you, or you're trying to, you know, notice sounds or notice the sensations within your body. That's what I'm kind of trying to do when I snatch or clean or squat, is I'm trying to notice what it feels like. And when you can start to associate what it feels like with what the correct thing is, you can go, you're just trying to make it feel the same way each time, and staying kind of focused and connected within that lift and not, you know, worrying about what happened in the lift before, or, you know, exactly if you did 12% more knee extension than the last time.
Yeah. So you're focused on more like body awareness than anything.
Yeah. And I think that, for me, especially since I didn't play a lot of sports and didn't do a lot of physical things as a kid, the being aware of where I'm at and what it feels like when I do it right is extra important, because I have to work a lot harder to, you know, develop that kind of body awareness and just general athleticism than I think some more talented people kind of have to work with. Like, so I feel like my focus always needs to be on, you know, trying to feel what it, because for a long time I would always round my back in the bottom of the squat, and I wouldn't notice that I did it. I couldn't feel that. So trying to keep the focus on, okay, was that tight? Was that where I needed to be? Hang out there for a second. What does this feel like? What does it feel like when I'm in the right position? Because a lot of times how I feel and how it looks are totally different. And I'm sure you've noticed that with some people where it's like, okay, I need you to arch your back tight. Nope, that's still not arched.
Tighter.
Nope,
tighter.
That's still, you're still not there. So really trying to, you know, spend, and that's why I'm such a big fan of sitting at the bottom in the snatch. And when you're warming up for cleans, just kind of like taking a moment to get down in the front squat and hang out. Because for me, knowing what it feels like works a lot better than, you can know what you're trying to do, but if you don't know what it feels like to have your low back set, then it's not gonna, knowing that you should be arching your back and knowing what it feels like to be arching your back are kind of different.
Right. So a lot of the time you'll correct something for an athlete or change something in a setup, foot position, hand width, maybe their chest angle over the bar in that start position, and they'll say it feels weird, but when we look at it, it looks correct, but they've been doing it incorrectly, so it feels different than what they were doing before. So that's a good thing, because then they'll understand that there is a difference between a right position and a less ideal position.
Yeah.
So trying to develop that within yourself is going to go a long way. And part of it just goes toward athleticism. You know, some people are going to have to work harder at it and be more diligent about their positions and what something should feel like. And some people just kind of naturally just obtain that progression a little more quickly. And so, like, for me, I played some sports in high school, but I think I've always had a good amount of bodily awareness. I think that if I had been a little more able to be active in sports growing up, I probably would have been. And I found weightlifting really late in life. I had done CrossFit before, and I wasn't great at CrossFit. Like, I wasn't competitive, but I could do all the movements. Like, I just wasn't strong enough to be a regional athlete.
Yeah.
Like, I could do all the movements. I can do inverted handstand push-ups on the rings. But can I do 50 of them? No. You know, can I snatch as much as Matt Frazier and Rick Froning and those guys? No. I just didn't have the strength base that some of those guys had playing at collegiate level sports and things like that. But I've developed my bodily awareness through mostly through like self exploration. Like, I've done MoveNet and things like that, and like that helps develop bodily awareness. I really wasn't a lot like really into it, but it kind of just helps develop different areas and ranges of movement, and that kind of helped me a lot. But I think over time, I focus on positions and technique when I'm doing the accessory things, like the clean pulls. I try to get to the same contact point every time. When I'm doing work from the hang, I try to hit that same position every time. Same start, same finish. So technically, it should transfer over into the entire lift. So when I'm working on those things, my position work is where I'm focusing on how it should feel. Once I'm doing the whole classic lift, once I'm doing the entire snatch and the entire clean and jerk, I'm not working on trying to figure out where those positions are at anymore. Maybe leading up to it at the lower working sets, maybe a little bit. But once I hit that top set, I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to do this, I need to do this. I'm just doing the top sets.
Yeah, and I think that's a good, that actually makes me want to clarify a little bit, in that when I'm in practice, that's when I'm really trying to focus on the feeling and focus on the movement and try to refine every set. So if we have, you know, 3 or 4 sets at 75%, then I'm going to spend those 3 or 4 sets really trying to be dialed in and like, okay, did that touch at the same place? What did it feel like? Was I balanced at the bottom? But in competition or on a day that we're doing a heavy single, when I'm practicing, I'm trying to be so in tune and try to really feel that movement that when I get to the performance time, I don't have to focus on it as much. So like when we're in competition, I don't know about you, but like I remember nothing about time on the platform. I basically black out the whole time. Yeah. I'll do a clean and jerk and be like, I don't really remember any of that. Right. And the times that I miss are the times that I remember, because it's the times that I was thinking about something. So I think that using practice to really focus on trying to make it feel correct and using your accessory exercises and your hang snatches and your snatch deadlifts to really try to say, okay, this is what it feels like in my feet, so that when you walk up to the bar, all you have to do is stand up and it's going to be really well ingrained. And that's why we do a lot of those kind of partial pulls or hang snatches and breaking the movement down, so you can really, okay, what does it feel like when the bar's 2 inches off the floor? What does it feel like when the bar's at the mid thigh? Where's my balance? What do I understand about this? And I think that means essentially, we're looking for our athletes to be present during the workout, right? So it's not, a lot of times when you get to the gym and you've had to work all day, it's really hard to not just kind of be like, I did my snatches, I'm going to go.
Yeah, yeah.
It be a little more demanding with yourself, where it's like, okay, I can refine that. I can make that a little better. Okay, my positions were right, but I was slow. Okay, so speed up a little bit on the next one. And kind of really trying to refine things in practice so that when it is time to compete, you're not just going through the motions. You're really dialed in with it. The thing that I sometimes have a problem with, and we've been kind of talking about how we get into fights with our own brains all week.
Yeah.
There's been a theme this week. But what do you do when you find yourself getting distracted while you're training? So like, say you're starting to set up, and you're all of a sudden, against your own will, your brain's just like, you know, you gotta pay rent tomorrow, right? Like, what do you do to like kind of like minimize those distractions? Like, what's your approach for getting the did I start the dishwasher out of your head and trying to get back into the lift? Or like when you're setting up and something does pop in, like, man, your hands hurt right now. Like, how do you refocus yourself when you do get distracted?
Well, it kind of goes back to where I was saying, like, once I touch the barbell, there's nothing going on. And so if I do get distracted, it's when I'm sitting there. And a lot of the time when I'm thinking about something, it's when I'm done training. Like once I'm training and I'm warmed up and I'm working on my stuff, I really don't have a whole lot else like entering my mind. And part of it is because, like, I've learned to try to meditate every day. And part of the process of meditation is when you get thoughts, because your mind's going to bombard you with ideas and distractions and, you know, did you start the dishwasher? Did you turn off the stove? So when that happens to me, I'll just say thinking and just let it go and then just focus on lifting. But most of the time when I'm in the gym, like, I try to just ignore everything else. And I think it's just a process of being or mastering your thoughts and emotions. And it's easier said than done. I don't know if I just have more practice at it, but when I'm training and I step up to the barbell, there's no fear. There's no worry. There's no doubt. I'm not happy about anything. I'm not sad about anything. It's just me and the barbell, and that's it. And I don't know if that's just something that works for me, but that's it. Like, I don't have anything else going on. Like, all my thinking is done on the side. Like, once I'm set up, my hands are on the barbell, go, and that's it.
Well, and what I'm kind of curious about is that I've recently kind of started trying to take up, like, a short daily meditation practice. And that's something that you've done for a couple of years now, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Maybe 2 years, yeah, a couple.
And so what I'm kind of curious about is that ability to just let stuff go and be focused on the bar like, do you think that has something to do with your consistent meditation practice? Because, you know, I think that the idea of, like, just acknowledging, oh, that's a thought, and letting it go is something that does take practice. And if the only time that you practice it is when you're in a gym in a chaotic environment, it's going to be a little bit harder to do than if you have, you know, 10 minutes a day where you sit quietly and just try to feel your weight on the ground or listen to the sounds in your house, or, you know, and try to stay focused on noticing your surroundings, like, you know, kind of being present in the moment and just kind of being there and not letting other things come in and distract. And that's kind of one thing that I hope to get out of this, is being able to have that, you know, setting up for a lift and not letting my mind wander. I have a pretty intense ADHD, so I have a super active mind. So sometimes when I'll be setting up, all of a sudden I find myself in the moments before I lift off the floor thinking about where the term rain check came from.
Okay.
And, like, it's just like, oh man, why do they say rain check? What is that? And then, you know, then between sets, I have to look it up. Otherwise I'll keep thinking about it. So, like, these little nothing thoughts end up really distracting me sometimes. Like, it's like, oh man, I wonder where coffee is sourced from. Like, I wonder where they get where Starbucks sources their coffee, or, you know, just like all these, like, little things.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that in kind of doing that kind of mindfulness meditation practice, that I can start kind of really just trying to be like, oh, get that out of here. Get that out of here. And I've only done, you know, really just the last, like, week and a half or so that I've been really trying to make an effort to do that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I always try to do a little bit of feeling and mindfulness stuff. The way that I was doing it before was mostly through the, like, brutal long ramwads where you're focused on breathing,
right?
Because during those times you can really kind of just get dialed into, like, the feeling in your hips and the feeling of your breath, and you're really focused. But not doing something physical while you're trying to do that is way harder for me. I've been really struggling with that, kind of waking up in the morning and, like, trying to sit down and meditate. And then all of a sudden, like, I'll be like, yeah, I'm doing really good. I really feel my breath. I can stay focused. Oh, man, I'm thinking about 11 things at once. Where did all this come from?
Right.
And I think that developing, it's mental training is what it is.
Yeah, it's mind training.
Yeah, and, you know, being able to train your mind to just kind of block other things out, I think, you know, your example of, you know, really being able to not think about anything when you're lifting, I get that sometimes, and sometimes I'm really dialed in, but sometimes I'm really distracted, and I feel like doing something like a mindfulness practice can probably really help you for those times between sets or those times before you set up to the bar, where it's just like, okay, what does the bar feel like in my hands? And that's it. That's just the bar. Yeah. I'm just here in this space and I have this object and we're moving together.
There was a quote by Archilochus that said, "We do not rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training." Oh. So if you're not training your mind, to be present when you're doing something, I mean, you're going to fall to whatever it is. So you're just going to get distracted. You're going to be afraid. You're going to have doubt, or you're going to overthink like what you're supposed to be doing. And so for me, the thing is that when I'm in the gym, that's when I have the most focus and concentration. I'm not saying that I never struggle with, whatever's going on in my life. You know, there's relationships with people, there's bills, there's work, there's school, or there's all these other things that are going on. And I'm not saying I never have any problems with sorting those thoughts out, because I struggle with myself. It's like I have an internal argument. Like, I don't want to think about that right now. And then, oh, well, what do you think about this? I'm like, no, that's not important. I'm not going to worry about that. So it's this constant battle of, you know, being present, acknowledging a thought, but just not dwelling on it. It's like a river. You know, if you have something that's floating towards you and it hooks onto whatever, like, let's say you're standing in the middle of the river and you're fishing or something like that, and then this log comes toward you and, you know, it's knocked you down and it's pinned you down. Like, do you just sit there and let it pin you down, or do you just kind of move it and then let it flow down the river? Because that's what your thoughts are. It's like this river of ideas and conversations and anything that you can think about. And you could get stuck or jammed in a spot unless you learn to let it go and continue on down. So that's where people, I think, they have that, they don't have the training to do that. Maybe on a general basis, but definitely not in the gym sometimes, because they're letting all these external things jam up their process of lifting, of being a better athlete. And so, like, training yourself to do that is just going to make you better in general, because if you can learn to let ideas go or write them down, maybe think about them later. But it's usually the distracted things that you don't want to think about that are intrusive and mess with you when you're trying to focus. And so for me, I think that meditation has kind of helped me do that. It's like I said, it's not perfect. It's a practice. And there's going to be days when you sit there and the whole time is just, your mind is just messing with you, and you might get maybe 60 seconds of that present focus on the breath. Nothing else is going on, just that one part. But that's still success, because you still learn to fight with that and search for that, that focus. And I think that people's beliefs limit them. You're like, oh, I can't learn to do that. It's like a fixed mindset. It's, well, I'm only as smart as I am now. I'm never going to be able to get smarter. Or I'm only as good an athlete as I am right now. I'm never going to be able to get better. And we were talking about this, about how, like, your brain is a supercomputer, and how you talk to yourself is the programming. And you shouldn't tell yourself anything that you don't want to be true. Like, if you say, well, oh, this is really heavy, like, I don't know if I can do this, you're not programming yourself for success. You're not setting yourself up for success. And so a lot of the time, people's beliefs will limit what they're able to do. And have you ever heard of the Dickens principle?
No, what's that?
So Charles Dickens wrote that movie, The Scrooge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it refers to that. So, like, you have the past, the present, and the future, right? So what do you believe and what do you think about from the past, from the present, and the future that's affecting you? Right? In a positive or negative way, but usually it's in a negative way. People think about the past, they'll come up with an excuse, like, it's always been like this, it's always going to be like that, right? So it's always been like this is the past, it's always going to be like that is the future. And then the present, they either forget or they make excuses how it's going to go either way. So when you're thinking about things, like, especially when it comes to weightlifting and you're trying to step up to the barbell and you're going for a PR or you're competing, you're like, oh, well, I've always struggled on my opener, or, you know, I've never hit this in competition, or a prime example is when people have a specific number that they have trouble hitting. So it's like, oh, I always mess up on this lift, like this percentage or this specific weight. And that's one of those things where it's just like you're letting the past determine what's going to happen. And so you need to learn to train yourself to not have those limiting beliefs.
Well, and I think that's kind of interesting in that, you know, a lot of what we're talking about with what you're thinking about while you're lifting is a lot of what we're talking about with the meditation stuff. It's being present in that moment. And in lifting or anything else that you're doing in your life, if you're really dwelling on that past or really worrying about that future, you're missing the only part that actually still exists. You're missing the present moment. You're not actually there. And I'm sure that we've all had times where we're, you know, hanging out with friends or like trying to have a conversation with somebody and you're just not there. You're worried about what's happening next week, or you're worried about something you said to somebody at work that might have been taken the wrong way. And you're really missing out on that moment with that person. And if you're worried about the lift you missed before, or if you're going to make a PR in 4 weeks, you're missing the moment that you have in the gym. And for, I kind of think that for everybody, the training is the part that it should be like enjoyable, and really being there for it, I think, is important. And I think with the meditation practice, it, like, I encourage you guys to try it. Do you use Headspace?
I use Calm.
Calm?
Yeah, because it's guided meditation, and then there's different things that you can kind of do with it. Like, it'll have specific topics for the day, like a daily meditation, and then there's other topics. Like, if, let's say you're struggling with just, like, stress, there's, like, 7 days of stress guided meditations, but like there's different variations of that, and it'll help you keep track of like how many hours you've done, how many sessions and stuff like that. So I like using that one.
The one that I've been using is Sam Harris came out with his meditation app, which is called the Waking Up Course. And what I really like about that is that it's each session builds on itself. So the first, you know, few is just really introducing the basics. And what I really like about his format is it's not just the guided meditation, but he also has kind of video lectures that go along with it, like posing a question or talking about why that happens, or, you know, ways to approach boredom. And one of the things that really stuck with me was in his, you know, lesson is like, if you're bored, it's really just a failure to pay attention.
Right.
If you're paying attention close enough, you'll never be bored by anything. And I think about times that it's like, you know, it's like as a kid or something where you had every reason to be bored, but then you watched an anthill and you just watch them move for, and you're like, oh man, I've been sitting here for 20 minutes watching these ants. So, you know, that boredom is a failure to pay attention, you know, because there's always something to look at, you know, like if you're sitting alone in your house and you're like, oh, I'm so bored, listen. What is, like, how many things can you hear in your refrigerator? Like, can you differentiate between the noise of the motor turning on and the noise of the coolant? Like, can you hear things? What can you see in your house? Like, there's always that being present. So if you're taking that into the gym, it's, okay, what is, like, what does the bar feel like in my hands?
Yeah.
What does this feel like in my pressure in my foot? What muscles are tired when I finish this? Like, trying to really notice things and be in tune with yourself while you're training, I think really brings it into like what your focus should be on. Because your focus should be on the lift. Like, what does it feel like? What am I doing? Where's my position? What's tired? Why was I off balance? You know, those sort of things, as opposed to just like letting yourself get distracted. And I think also within this is, you know, do you feel like visualization training is its own form of meditation, or do you feel like that's a different skill?
Oh, that's absolutely a form of meditation. And I think it's invaluable because I think that if you can picture something, right? That means you know it well enough to be able to repeat it with your own body, right? So if and there's two ways to do it. There's looking at yourself from the outside in, and then there's from your perspective, like a third person view, first person view, yeah. Right? So when Grayson, when he was talking about, you know, when he's setting up and he feels the balance in his foot, and the way he's describing it, it's like he can see it. He can see himself setting up that way. He can see himself feeling the knurling on the barbell, where he's leaned over, where the balance in his feet are. You know, when he shifts back in that lift a little too early, he can visualize that. He knows where he's not supposed to be and where he's supposed to be. So being able to visualize yourself from that first person perspective is very valuable, but also from that third person perspective. So like when I film videos, I like to view them from the three-quarter angle because I can see the extension, I can see where the bar is over the body, I can see the footwork, some of what the bar path is, the overhead finish position, lockout, things like that. So when I visualize from that position. It's like I'm watching a video of myself over okay. and over and over and over and over again. So for me, if there's a mistake or something that I'm working on, I picture where that's happening and how to correct it. So like I'll see myself in that start position. Where are my shoulders? Are they over the bar? Where's my center of balance? As I'm pulling, does the bar come toward me or is it going around my knees? Do I finish tall and then start changing direction quickly? Or is it delayed? Or did I try to pull a little too early? So visualization is it's an invaluable tool to be able to diagnose or reinforce something that you're trying to do correctly. So it, like I said, it's just like watching a video. If you see something done correctly over and over and over again, your chances of being able to repeat it are gonna increase. And I know there's some athletes that were injured and just using visualization, they were able to maintain their technique. Maybe not strength entirely, but the sharpness of their movement was retained because of their ability to visualize.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's so much interesting stuff about visualization and performance. But one thing that talking to one of our members is a psychology professor at UNM, and we were talking about visualization, and I was saying that a lot of people have a really hard time. And he brought up a really interesting point in that if you start your visualization practice with just trying to visualize yourself snatching, why would you start with the most complicated thing imaginable, right? Because the snatch is super hard.
Yeah, that's very
it's going to be really hard to just like figure out what that feels like. So what he recommended and what I think is a really interesting approach is start with really basic stuff. Using visualization, imagine touching your fingertip to your nose. And once you can do that and you can really picture that, then add the complexity. Okay, visualize, you know, a squat, just a body weight squat. Once you can do that, add complexity. So trying to start with the clean and jerk, if you're struggling with that, and if you sat down to visualize and you're like, I just can't see it, or I just see myself doing it wrong and I can't like do it the way that I want to do it in my own head. Take a step back, visualize yourself drinking a cup of coffee, you know, try to really feel it, right? Okay. Now the cup's on my lips. Now I feel the liquid. Now I'm, you know, I feel the warming on the way down. Visualize more simple things as a start and then add the complexity, because it is something that you have to practice. Because a lot of times in visualization, just like meditation, your thoughts bombard you.
Yeah.
You'll be like, okay, and now I'm passing the knees, and I don't really like chicken that much. It's like, why am I thinking about this? So starting with something more simple and then building your way up, and then also figuring out if you need third person or first person visualization to make it the way that you know, for your style, because everybody's going to be a little bit different. Some people are going to need to be focused on what does this look like, and some people will need to focus on what it feels like. And I think that just kind of figuring out for yourself what's the way that you can achieve that is a kind of interesting thing. And, you know, kind of touching back to the meditation thing, one thing that's kind of been tripping me out is... If you're paying attention, you're not generating your thoughts. They just show up.
Right.
You're not like saying, oh, I'm going to think about this. Things are just popping in and out. And they seem to come out of nowhere. And it's really been interesting to try to like, oh, if I'm not generating these, like if I'm not making a decision to think about this, where are these thoughts springing out of? Like what, like that's been something that's kind of like blowing my mind this week. Like,
okay. I'm gonna revisit that, but I just wanted to add one thing to the visualization thing. So like, that is an excellent thing to do to start off. If you haven't done it before, just start small. So I didn't think about that. So that's something that you can take away. You can practice. Start small with your visualizations, and then with the meditation too. Like start small. You don't have to do 20 minutes. Like you don't have to sit there for 30 minutes and try to reach enlightenment. Just do it for 2 minutes. Just focus on your breathing. Like it doesn't have to be really that complicated. Just try it small. Build on it. Like that's how you get confidence, right? Is you build on the small successes over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So there's just the one thing that I did want to add was, if you can visualize yourself doing something, that means you've already done it before. You've already done it in your head. Like it's possible. Like you've accomplished it because you can see it. So just tell yourself you're doing it again because you've already done it. You've already seen it. You've already completed it in your mind. And your mind's a powerful thing. So if you already feel like you've done it before, then why can't you do it again?
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard, you know, some people say, even as far as, like, your brain, if you're detailed enough in your visualization, it can't tell the difference between you doing it and you thinking it. Because it's all just input, you right. know? It's just an electrical system. There's no... So if you're detailed enough with it, and you've accomplished that so many times in your head, when you approach the bar, it's not going to say... hey, I don't know if you can do this, because as far as it knows, you've already done it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's all I'm saying is like, if you're capable of doing that, it's going to benefit you to a great extent. And then, so to get back to the topic of like where your thoughts come from, it's a strange thing. Cause like we're beings that have thoughts about our thoughts, right?
Yeah.
It's weird because like we think about how we think or what we think about, and it's a very strange concept because like if you just say after you finish listening to this podcast, turn everything off, turn the phone off or set it aside, sit somewhere where it's a little quiet and just be for 5 minutes and see what happens. Your mind is just going to try to fill that space with everything. Like, you know, why you lost that relationship 5 years ago, you know, where your dog is when you're not there, like what's it doing? Do fish care about plastic in the ocean? I don't know. Like your brain will come up with random things to fill that blank space because it's not used to not having some kind of input, especially in this age where everything's digital. We're using our phones all the time. I the new iOS has a feature that gives you an account of what your screen time is, and it's kind of scary like how much time you spend looking at your phone. And so your brain is constantly receiving that input and it never gets a rest. So when you actually do sit down and you're quiet and you're trying to be peaceful and calm, your mind wants to fill that space so bad because it's uncomfortable. It's like sitting in a car with a stranger and not knowing what to talk about.
Yeah,
like that's what your brain is doing. It's just like, oh, so what do you think about this weather? It's like, don't do this to me, man. Come on. So, and so it's just, it goes back to that mental training. It's like, can you train yourself to not have to fill that space? Because that's going to carry over, like we were talking about, to the barbell. Because in that moment of silence, when you are setting up and you feel that knurling, your brain is going to fill that space with something. Like, and it may be, you know, I can do this. I got this. It could be, I don't know, this feels kind of heavy, or like I'm kind of tired. It could be whatever. But your brain is going to do, like I said, it's going to fall to the lowest level of training that you have. So for me, thoughts are such a weird thing. And like I said, I'll fight with myself. I'll even say to myself, like, I don't want to think about this right now. And then another thought will pop up. It's like, I don't know where it comes from.
Well, and it's getting caught in that loop. And I think that one of the hardest things, and one of the main reasons I've really started to try to incorporate some of this practice into my routine, is I'm really uncomfortable with myself. Like I'm really used to like listening to music or talk or reading something or watching something, and I realized one day I am like incapable of being alone with myself. Like it's like it was this weird like epiphany where I was like, I'm super uncomfortable just being alone with my thoughts. And it struck me as something that's like, no, you need to work on that. You need to be able to be alone with yourself. Because if you don't, because that, what it feels like to me is like, it's like you don't really know the contents of your consciousness if you're not like paying attention. Like I get, you know, caught into, you know, thought loops where it's just a worst case scenario builds into an even worse case scenario and it just spirals. And what I hope is to be able to eventually kind of be like, where are these things coming from? Like, why am I always so concerned about this? Why am I so insecure about these things? And paying attention to them is the first step in being more okay with yourself. And the more in tune you are with yourself, the better you're going to lift. You know, because if you're, you know, distracted and uncomfortable, you're going to have a really hard time, you know, putting the weights overhead that you want if you're not even secure enough in yourself to be alone with yourself for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And I don't think a lot of people can be. Like, and it's what I was saying earlier, if you can't sit there for 5 minutes without anything going on, like, what does that say about your ability to be calm and at peace and just comfortable with where you are in that present moment? Like, so for a lot of people, they don't ever have any self-reflection. They don't ever think about why they do the things that they do or think the things that they think. And I think that's, we were talking about like the unexamined life isn't worth, you know, living. It's like there's no meaning to it. So to be able to improve yourself, right? Whatever it is you want to work on, whatever it is that you want to accomplish, the self-reflection and the ability to reason with yourself, to calm yourself, to convince yourself to be different and take the steps, those uncertainties, you're going to have to embrace those. And even the uncertainties about yourself, because there's things that, you know, you might not be able to explain them to yourself without a psychology degree. But if something makes you mad, like, why does it make you mad? Like, if something bothers you, why does it bother you? And that's the questions that people don't ask themselves. Like, they just get mad. They just react to those emotions, instead of saying, well, why does, you know, her leaving the dishes unwashed really make me irritated?
Yeah, you know, looking for the deeper reason.
Right, yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, well, so I have two things with that. One is you could only be angry or sad or frustrated as long as you stay focused on that emotion. You have to consciously regenerate that feeling to stay that way. And if you can be like, oh, I'm angry. Why am I angry? Okay, well, that doesn't really make sense. I don't have any real right to be angry about this. It makes it much easier to move on and kind of pass through that, you know, tough phase where you're like, man, I'm just really pissed. And then you take a step back and you go, well, I'm just being kind of dramatic. I'm being a little, like, this isn't really a problem. I'm just, you know, maybe I'm tired or maybe I'm hungry. Right. You know, like, is it really something worth being angry about? And if you don't examine, like, why you feel a certain way, it's just going to continue to build up and you're going to stay focused on it, as opposed to, you know, really examining why you feel that way allows you to kind of put it aside and carry on with the rest of your day. Because, you know, if you're in that negative headspace, you're only going to be there as long as you're focused on being in that negative space. And if you can acknowledge, I feel kind of bad today, but the sun feels really good on my skin right now. All of a sudden, you're back in the moment. You feel something. You're like, oh, the breeze is nice today, though. So like redirecting to be back at the present is going to help, well, your relationships with other people, but also your performance in the gym, I think.
Yeah. A lot of that is just being aware that you have these things in your life, but you don't have to hold on to those things, and you can let them go. It goes back to that analogy of the river, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to be stuck somewhere, like, you can choose to move that thing and let it float down the river, or you can just choose to let it pin you down. So it comes back to, what do you want to accomplish in and out of the gym? So if it in the gym, like, let's say you have a problem with a lift, and if you don't ever think about it and you just rely on coach to constantly tell you the same thing over and over again, you're not learning. You're just putting a band-aid on it for that day, and then you're just going to keep doing it over and over again. Like, nothing ever changes. So if you don't think about it, if you don't work on it, it's not going to change. And I think it all goes back to action. Like, you have to do something. You can't just think about it. You can't just say you want to do it. You actually have to do something about it. So if you want to be mentally tougher, you have to do things that are going to make you mentally tougher. And if you want to, you know, be more athletic and be stronger, you're going to have to do things that make you more athletic and more strong. So it's just that it all goes back to training and action and doing the things that aren't easy, that are going to make you a better athlete and a better person in general. And like I said before, like, I'm not perfect. It's a continual process of trying to work on yourself, realizing that you're doing something, trying to work on that. You know, the emotions are, like, for me, emotions are the enemy, right? Along with expectations and ego. But I'm constantly battling all those things, and we all do. But emotions probably are the worst ones, because people, they'll say, oh, I'm caught up in my feelings, or I'm, you know, I feel this way, I feel that way. But emotions come from you. You're the bank, and you can always create more of them. So that vicious loop, that cycle that people get into, you're taking out loans and then repaying them back, and taking out loans and repaying them back. It's like that payday loan service where it's just like you're constantly trapped in this loop. So you're the bank, though. You're the one that creates those feelings of being offended or being angry or being loved, even. Like, love doesn't come from another person. You feel loved.
Yeah.
That's why you say, well, like, I feel loved. Because you're using that other person to help you generate that feeling. But really, it does come from you. It's just like anger, right? Anger comes from you, too. That other person didn't make you angry. You're angry because something inside you feels like you were slighted, or, you know, whatever reason you're angry, that feeling's being generated by you. They can't control how you feel or think or even what you do. That thought, that reaction, that emotion, that's generated from the self.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think that's a really great way of framing that, because, you know, all of these things come from you, and if you can learn to recognize them, and you can learn to dwell on, you know, positive things, right, and regenerate, because if you can generate your emotions, you can generate love more than anger if you learn and you focus.
Right.
So speaking of actions, and speaking of things that'll pop into your head and you'll think about when you don't want to, here's our short little thought experiment for today.
Okay.
So you're the conductor on a train.
Okay.
Right? You're in the front seat. You're in control. The train is coming up to some tracks, and there are three people that are utterly oblivious to the fact that the train is coming, standing on the tracks. It's too late. You can't stop the train. What you can do is you can divert the train onto a secondary track. On the secondary track, there is one person standing on it. Do you pull the lever to divert the train, killing one person, causing actively the death of another, or through inaction, do you let three people die, but you did not choose consciously to kill another person?
What would I do?
What would you do? What do you do in the train?
I would switch the lever and kill the one person.
Because you have a net two lives gained.
Well, it's not just that. I think for me, it's worse to not decide to do something and have a negative outcome associated with it than it is to commit to an action and have it be under my responsibility. Like, I chose this. Yes, it may not have been the best choice, but I chose to do it. Instead of saying, well, I'm not going to do anything and then just let a bunch of people die. Like, I think that's worse. So it's that conundrum, though, right? Of, you know, what would you choose to do, the lesser of two evils? Because something's always got to give. There's always a pro and a con. There's also a gain and a loss, right? And Marcus Aurelius, I'm going to paraphrase it, but it's basically like, what's good for the hive is what's good for the bee. And what's bad for the bee is bad for the hive.
Right? So it's kind of whatever has... So in that answer, it's looking at the... So it's not whether the action to divert the train is right or wrong. It's the outcome of the action. Inaction will result in three people being dead. And action will result in one.
Right.
And that's better off in the long run.
But that's just my take on it.
Yeah.
For me, a conscious choice and a decision to do something, for me, is more valuable than to just not do something and then let people die and then act like I'm not responsible for it.
So, with that being said, you'll throw the lever, net saving the family on the track at the expense of the worker on the other track who's right. Not expecting a train. Now, different situation. The train is same situation. There are three people on the track. The train is coming towards them. But this time, you're on a bridge over the train tracks. Okay? You're standing on a pedestrian footbridge. You see that this train is not going to stop. Lucky for you, there is a morbidly obese man standing next to you on the footpath. You can push him off the bridge in front of the train and stop it, net saving those people on the track. But you have to actively push the person in front of the train. Almost the same situation,
right.
But the action you have to take is different.
It's more personal. It's more up close.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's where the, you know, so this is, you know, looking at consequentialism. You're still net saving two lives, but now the action is a little more malicious because that guy isn't on the track. He's just minding his own business, eating a sandwich.
I would probably push that dude off. but I mean, it's... The thing is pushing a lever, you know, and there was an experiment, I don't remember if it was at Stanford, where, you know, they told participants that this guy had to get these questions right, and if he didn't, you'd have to shock him, right?
I think that was the Milgram experiment.
Yeah, that's the one, yes. Yeah. So it's that same concept, like, how far are you willing to go? Not only... because you're put in a position where you have to make a choice, but also because you're in a position of like authority almost, right? So in this train scenario, it's just like, well, for me, it's almost utilitarian. Try to do the most good for the most people. And unfortunately, if you got to sacrifice somebody, I mean, that's the choice I would make.
Well, and so what I think is so interesting about those two scenarios, because the outcome of them is the same, whether you choose to do nothing or choose to do something. But it feels a whole lot more like murder when you have to put your hands on somebody.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a foreshadowing of what I assume will be a couple of philosophy corners examining two kind of rival thoughts in you know, moral philosophy between consequentialism, where the value or the good or bad of an action is determined by the results of that action. So if you do something and the results are beneficial for humanity, then that is the right thing, versus deontology, where the action itself is good or bad, regardless of the consequences of that action.
Okay.
So I think we'll touch on this a little bit more later, but that's kind of an intro. Would you pull that lever, guys?
Yeah, and before you guys deem me a psychopath, I have thought about this before, so it's not a total surprise.
And but... he'd be, like, sort of sad pushing the guy off the bridge.
Yeah, I would be. I'd hold a sandwich for him, though. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, then... And I should give him a shove.
So. Yeah, give it to his family.
But no, so the takeaways from this are, if you haven't tried meditation, give it a try. It doesn't have to be long. Visualization is a good tool. Once again, you don't have to be an expert at visualizing the whole snatch. Just common movements, something that'll help you get along that skill a little better. And your mental thought processes, just being aware of what you think, why you think it, and some self-reflection. Maybe sit alone for 5 minutes and see how you do with that. And yeah, anything else, Grayson?
No, just adding into that, you know, start asking yourself, like, why do you think things are good and bad? And, you know, how do you determine whether any of those actions you're taking are right or wrong? That might give you something to think about in that time, because you can fill a lot of space with that.
Yeah, no, that's good. All right, y'all. We'll see you next time. Until then.
All right. Happy lifting, guys.